Hello and salutations to all. Welcome to this edition of the End Zone Podcast. I'm your host, not as always, John Ders. Eric Jensen's with me. Eric, what the heck is going on?
Yeah, I don't know. Folks, if you're hearing this, it's because John Ders has taken me hostage. I'm in a dark basement somewhere in Illinois. He has a gun to my head. Please send help. I repeat, SOS.
You can get real, Eric. Come on, this is.
This is not a drill. I've been kidnapped and taken hostage, and now John Ders is part of is the podcast host. But no, I wanted to do a Broncos preview, and I was gonna have someone who wrote about the Broncos come on. But then I was kind of like, man, I want to talk about the Broncos. So I told them like, oh hey, let's hold off. You can come on for the AFC West preview, and they were like, oh yeah, that's cool. And John Ders was like, hey, I'll record your show and ask you questions and be the host and let you do a little bit more talking for once, because everyone needs more of Eric's voice in my life. But let's flip it around on you. You did a comedy show recently. How was that? If I lived in Illinois, I would have gone.
Yeah, but, so I went to the IO Theater's improv night, open mic night, Monday, and I did stand-up comedy for the first time, and I was like kind of down on myself. I was like, I could have gone better. But then I went again Tuesday to a different place, a different open mic, and I bombed and felt way better about Monday night. So yeah, I'm you know, getting the reps in. I'm, you know, rolling with the punches. You're gonna fail a lot doing stand-up comedy, which is what everybody tells me, and so far that seems to be true. So I'm sticking with it, but things could be going better with the stand-up comedy.
Give me one quick set, and I'll give you a grade.
You want me to do my five-minute set right here?
Well, not a full five-minute set, but, like, what's, like, your biggest, like, what's your, like, shortest bit, I guess?
I do a lot of stuff about how a woman who I laid with, his last name was Batman, so I do a lot of jokes about how I've had sex with Batman.
Oh.
It's like, you know, those the Adam West Batman would be like, pow. Well, for me, it was like hump, premature ejaculation, disappointment. That's one of the jokes.
All right. I give that a A.
All right. Thank you. You could have said F. It doesn't matter.
Honestly, no. I feel bad. I lied to you, and I would never lie to a friend. It was a solid B minus. Wasn't quite average, but very close. So, yeah, nice.
You know what, man?
Nice tries.
I'm putting myself out there. I'm trying.
Hey, no dissing. I wasn't dissing. I was just saying.
I'm
fine
with a B minus. You know, doing stand for the first time, get a B minus. That's pretty good.
B minus is a good score, Jonders. So I'm gonna throw it back to you, because I hijacked somehow, some way. I hijacked my own podcast from someone else. So that's when you know you have a problem with needing to control the flow of a show. So I'm going to throw it back to you.
Yeah, so we're going to get Eric to answer him some questions about his favorite Broncos. And my first question for you, Eric, is do you believe in John Elway as the GM?
If you would have asked me after free agency, I would have said no. If you would have asked me over the draft, I would have said no. But honestly, like, meh. I'm indifferent right now. Like, this is a big year, and the preseason will tell me a lot if I believe in John Elway or not. But right now, it's like, I'm pretty lukewarm on him. Like, I've never really thought he's been one of the best GMs in the league. I've never really been in that boat. I've always thought he's kind of upper echelon, but not quite the top. I'd say he's kind of mid-tier right now. I don't know. I wish they would have drafted a quarterback with the fifth overall pick. I think they missed a huge shot on Josh Rosen. That would have been a dream scenario for Eric. But, I mean, Bradley Chubb's pretty good, too. So
yeah, Chubb kind of fell in their lap. Can I take you back to 2012 when they drafted Brock Osweiler over Russell Wilson because he was taller? Could you imagine Russell Wilson sitting behind Peyton Manning for 3 years and then taking over that team?
Yeah, let's not talk about that. Brock Osweiler, I don't think there's a single player that watching them makes me feel worse about myself somehow than I cannot describe the feeling I get when I watch Brock Osweiler play football. It is, I don't know. It's depressing, man.
Do you want to play like, some quarterback over-unders right now?
For Case-er Keenum?
Yeah, for Case Keenum.
Well, first of all, I think Case Keenum's going to be okay. Average. But I've always been a Respect Case Keenum guy. This has been a Respect Case Keenum podcast. But, yeah, I don't know where I stand on him right now. So, yeah, why don't we play some over-under and see where I stand on this guy.
3,500 passing yards this year out of Case Keenum. True or over under?
3,500. What did he have last year?
He barely eclipsed it last year with, I think it was 35. Let me see if I have it. I think it was 3,556 last year.
Let's go under, but I don't think by much. Like 3,300 probably.
Yeah, last
somewhere
year
in my
was
range.
3,547.
Yeah, so a little bit under. I don't think he's going to fall way off a cliff, but I don't think it's going to be that.
22 touchdown passes.
I'll say over. I think they're going to throw a lot in the red zone. Actually, I take that back. I completely disagree with what I just said. I'm going to say under. And I think that's because they're going to run a lot more in the red zone than they are going to pass. So,
66% passer.
Okay, let me just tell you something right now. I saw this, and it gave me a chance to make my quick point. I don't think passing completion percentage, whatever, I don't think that means anything in the NFL. Like, I think that's the most worthless stat in the NFL, because if you use that stat, then you believe that Eli Manning is an elite quarterback because he always has like 70% completion rating because he throws checkdown passes. Like, I think that's the worst stat in the NFL, but I'll say
Eli Manning, the two-time Super Bowl champion and future Hall of Famer.
Hashtag washed.
Hashtag he hasn't aged in 10 years. Have you seen a photo of him from 2008 and 2018? It's the same guy.
Yeah, but his arm got lots weaker. But yeah, I saw that joke on Twitter. It was good, Jaunders.
That was another B-minus out of me.
I mildly smiled.
So, do you want to answer this question or is it beneath you?
I said over by a little bit.
Oh, you said
bit.
Over. Okay. Hey,
yeah.
Interceptions, that's a real stat. I don't care who you're going to do. Over,
stat.
Under, 8 interceptions.
Ooh, what do you have last year?
He had 7.
Oh, yeah, I'm going over. Oh. Like, yeah, I think he's due to throw some interceptions, especially because the Broncos, like, offensive line is okay, but they didn't really address it. Which I was very confused about, and if Menelik Watson starts again at tackle, it's going to be a mess. So, yeah, I could definitely see Case Keenum having to scramble out and throw up some of those passes he did last year in Minnesota, and some of the passes, like, where he scrambles out and just throws it, like, 40 feet in the air, and somehow Adam Thielen grabs it. Like, he's very fortunate not to have those picked off. So I think he's probably going to throw 10 to 14 interceptions. So
you just brought up Thielen. How will Sanders and Thomas stack up to Diggs and Thielen?
All right, number one, Demaryius Thomas is washed. Demaryius Thomas hasn't been good since the year before Peyton Manning fell off a cliff. He struggles with drops. He really doesn't get open down the field. The only way he can get yardage is if you throw little bubble screens to him. That was even the case during the Peyton Manning years. He's not a good deep threat. He's not, like, people say he's super fast, but, like, off the line against coverage, he's not that fast. If you get the ball in his hands and some blockers in front of him, he can turn it on. But Emmanuel Sanders is a much better purely deep threat wide receiver. I think Emmanuel Sanders should be the number one guy this year. I think they should move Thomas to the number two guy. Although I always have a hard time differentiating between one and two wide receivers because it's basically just what side of the field you're on. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't, to me, it doesn't matter as much. But still, I think Emmanuel Sanders is the better of those two. I think that they don't stack up great just because Adam Thielen, I think, is an all-pro wide receiver. And Stephon Diggs, he was a big product of Case Keenum, I think, but he's still a good wide receiver. And I don't know. I'd say they're, like, if I had to give it, like, a number score, I'd say Thielen and Diggs with Keenum were, like, a 7. And Thomas and Sanders will be, like, a 6.5. So just underneath them a little bit. But I think there are similarities there. But you don't have that, like, all-pro, like, all-star guy necessarily unless Demaryius Thomas really recaptures his form. So
I think you might be underrating Diggs a little bit, just throwing that one out there. That's fine, though.
Yeah, maybe so. But still, I'd say that the Minnesota core last year was much better than the Broncos wide receiving core. But, hey, you can't count out Cortland Sutton, who actually I really liked that the Broncos picked him up. Like, he was rated by some as, like, one of the best wideouts in the draft, and they got him in the second round. And, I mean, I saw him in a bowl game at SMU, and I really liked what I saw. I don't know if that's a product of just one season playing lackluster opponents in college, but I'm excited to see what Cortland Sutton brings to the table. I think that he'll have a decent role this year in the offense.
So last year, Case Keenum was a playoff quarterback, and everybody was like, yeah, I mean, this makes sense based on what we've seen. Do you think this year, if he's a playoff quarterback again, will it make as much sense as it did last year?
No, because there's less... How do I put this? Because no, but it'll make people approach it from a different way. Last year, people said Keenum's a product of his surroundings and talent level around him. If he makes it to the playoffs this year and he plays as well as he did last year, I think you have to consider him like a borderline top 10 quarterback, like around 11 to 12, like right on the edge of getting in to top 10. Because, like, the Broncos don't have a good offensive line. One. They have a decent right side. Garrett Bowles was good. Ronald O'Leary's a good guard. They have a decent center. But the left side, again, Menelik Watson's a mess. And they didn't really find anyone to fix that. So I'm going to say to you that he has worse surroundings this year. So, yes, I'd be more surprised this year if he made it to the playoffs than he did last year. Although I'd say his receiving core is similar, but obviously, again, not as great as Minnesota's was.
I found out this morning that Jamaal Charles is still playing for the Denver Broncos, but that leads to my larger point. Who's going to play running back this year for the Broncos?
I really like Devontae Booker. Everyone hates Devontae Booker for some reason, who's a Broncos fan on Twitter. But I like analogy time. Chris Carson is to you as Devontae Booker is to me. Devontae Booker is a guy since he came out of college, and it might be just partly because I'm from Utah and he's a Utah guy. But, like, ever since he came out of college, I've been pounding the table for him. He plays well. He shows burst. Like, he's got it. He's everything that Chris Carson is, but he can never really put it together, just like Chris Carson. Jonders, they're the same player.
Chris Carson put it together. He just broke his leg.
He put it together for, like, 2 quarters, and then he broke his leg, dude. Right. Like,
did it for 3 games, but whatever.
Okay, but, like, Devontae Booker, he's good. I think they might give the start to Royce Freeman, though. Everyone's way into him. He was great at Oregon. I don't think he can run between the tackles. He just doesn't quite have the size to do it. But I think he can be a good receiving back. Kind of when I look at him, I see something closer to Christian McCaffrey. So that's kind of exciting. But Jamaal Charles, like he did, like when the Broncos had 3 weeks where people thought the Broncos were going to be good, Jamaal Charles actually like performed half decently. And even when they were bad, like he got a few snaps. He's obviously not going to be the starter, and I'd be surprised if he makes the roster. But if he does make the roster, he's good. He's a good like third down back if you need one or 2 yards in a pinch. So I think that they might keep him on almost in a fullback type role almost.
Huh. That's interesting. Will this year be remembered as the year's butt, Jake Butt?
Oh, actually, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm not sure. If he comes back from injury, yes. I was really excited last year when they drafted him because I watched a lot of Michigan the year he played at Michigan, and I really liked him as a player. But then he got injured. So we'll see how he comes back. If he comes back strong, then I think absolutely he can be a great receiving threat. And I think if he plays well, the offense can really be good this year, especially if he's a good blocking tight end. Especially if he's a good blocking tight end, I think that you can really make the case that that'll help out the Broncos quite a bit this year.
What's the problem with the secondary, and is there a way to fix it?
A problem with the secondary. Let's run down who's on the secondary. At safety, you got Sua Cravens, Will Parks, Simmons, I want to say. At corner, you lost to keep the lead, but you have Chris Harris and Bradley Roby still. I wouldn't say there's a problem with the secondary. Like, they're obviously... I don't know. Like, what? Why? Let me flip a question on you. Why do you think there is a problem with the secondary?
T.J. Ward was a mainstay there. He's not there anymore. Stewart is a 70.3 according to Pro Football Focus. Roby is okay at 84, and Harris is an 83. But if you lose Tlaib, I don't know. I just feel like the secondary has been a strength the past so many years, and now it's kind of it's a little bit. Brock is your nickel secondary, who's a 45.3 on Pro Football Focus. And I get that this isn't gospel, but it just seems like you went from having the secondary kind of being a strength of the team, and now it's a little bit in flux.
Yeah, I'd say that you're right. It's gone from, like, elite to good. But I wouldn't call that a major weakness. As far as I counter your TJ Ward point with saying... Yes, he was gone last year, but if you watched him with the Buccaneers last year, he really lost a step, and they kind of got ahead of a curve on cutting him. And I thought Will Parks and Brandon Stewart played okay, especially during that first half of the season. I think a lot of last year and a lot of what happened with that secondary and that defense and that team in general, and this is, I don't know if you have any questions about the coaching staff, but... I think it was a lot on Vance Joseph. I'm not going to lie. Like, I don't think he did a good job in his first year as the Broncos head coach. I think he lost the locker room right before that Philadelphia game, and then they got blown out there, and it was just a – no. So, yeah, the Chargers game. The Chargers game is where he lost the locker room right after the Giants game, and they never really recovered. They just kind of spiraled out of control from there. But –
So who? I didn't think it's Roby that lines up on Keenan Allen every year, or Keenan Allen?
No, that'd be Chris Harris. And I still think Chris Harris is a top 10 corner in the league. Like, no doubt about it. He's still a Pro Bowler. He's still a good corner.
How many years has he been in the league?
I believe he's been in the league. I believe this will be his fourth or fifth year, I want to say. Don't quote me on that, though. I don't know off the top of my head.
This is going to be his eighth year.
His eighth year. Damn, he's older. Yeah, but he didn't really get his start because he was still there during the Peyton Manning kind of bad secondary years where they didn't – I don't know why they didn't play him.
Yeah, man. I mean, but, no offense, but I'll always remember just Chad Bailey being in that Super Bowl. And he had no business. I mean, Doug Baldwin was running right by him.
Yeah, no, he was part – wow. I did not realize that he was that old. I didn't realize that he was a part of the bad Broncos defense. Man, those were different times
well,
when the Broncos used to be able to drop 50 on you. I miss those days. What?
Was Harris on the lines at that point?
I'm not sure, but I don't recall him ever starting a game before the 2015 season, kind of mid-season. I'm not entirely
sure. You know what? I don't know what I was talking about. He was always on the Broncos.
Yeah, no, he just didn't really get any starts. He was kind of underdrafted, but I mean, he played really well, and he's been a consistent shutdown corner over the last few years. I think Isaac Yiadom's a guy they drafted. He could be a decent slot kind of nickel corner. But yeah, you are correct. Like, it's obviously not going to be as good as it has been in past years, just because they lost Aqib Talib and just because it's a different looking secondary. But I certainly don't think the secondary is a weakness. I wouldn't say it's a weakness.
It's better than what I have going on with my team in Seattle. So, yeah, let's move on to a little true or false. Paxton Lynch is on the team week one.
I'd say probably true because I think they're going to keep three quarterbacks no matter what, but I think he'll be the third quarterback. I think Chad Kelly is going to show out in the preseason and kind of take the backup job.
True or false? Von Miller is the defensive player of the year.
False. There's just way too much defensive talent in the NFC this year, and just way too much defensive talent on the Chargers, who honestly, I don't know why the Chargers are coming up, but respect for Chargers. They've got the best roster in the AFC, hands down.
Bosa, Ingram, and Hayward can all be a contender for that award, but they'll probably all get votes away from each other.
For sure. I mean, Justin Tuck, like, he somehow always figures out a way to be in that Defensive Player of the Year award, even though the Raiders' defense is consistently terrible, he still figures out a way to get sacks and be up for that award. Like, I mean, unless Von Miller does something really crazy, like gets between like 18 and 21 sacks, I really don't see him being the Defensive Player of the Year. I think that'll go to, I'm not sure yet, but I'd say right now my money would be on Miles Jack. I think he's going to have a really good year this year.
Interesting. Okay, yeah. True or false, the Broncos make the playoffs?
Man, I hate saying true because that sets my expectations too high. And you know me, Jonders, I like to set my expectations as low as possible. But yeah, I do think they can make the playoffs. I think that they're going to go 10-6. I think the AFC is bad enough that if they make it to 9-7 or 10-6, they can definitely make the playoffs. I think it's all going to come down to the division because I think they can easily win 7 games outside of division. But in division, there's a lot of just uncertainty. They have a really hard time winning in Kansas City. They have a really hard time beating San Diego in Denver. I mean, LA in Denver. So there are a lot of just different variables with this team. And yeah, I mean, it's not.
They get the Browns late in the year, but what's not going to help them is that in the last game, they play the Chargers. The week before that, they play the Raiders.
Yeah.
Those could be two tough games depending on if the Raiders are in it at that point or not. They play in early December, they play the Bengals, which might be a gimme game, but then they play the 49ers, and who knows what Jimmy G is going to be like at that point. You figure around Thanksgiving, they're going to play the Steelers, and the Steelers will be in it still.
It all just depends on how they start. I think they could start if they start hot, which I think they could. I think they could. Hold on, let me.
Here's the thing about the Broncos, because they start off with the, you know, home for the Seahawks, home for the Broncos, at Baltimore, home for the Chiefs. And honestly, I am not surprised if they're 4-0 or 0-4.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be shocked if they were going for through that stretch. I think they can definitely beat the Raiders, and I think they can definitely beat the Chiefs at home. I think that I honestly think they don't lose their first game until they play the Rams, and even that game, I think it's going to be competitive. But I think
let's hypothetically say that Lamar Jackson gets put in at halftime in week two, and Lamar Jackson's first start is against the Broncos. Then they're playing Russell Wilson, Lamar Jackson, and Pat Mahomes. So they're playing three mobile quarterbacks with starting arms. So that's going to be...
I mean, have you looked at the Broncos' pass rush lately? Like,
no,
it's
like,
arguably
I'm a big fan
the deepest
of Wolf,
in the league.
We don't know what Chubb is. I'm a big fan of Wolf, and obviously Von Miller is, like, the guy, I think. But that's why I'm saying...
Not to mention Sheldon Ray... like the guys coming off of injury, like there's
so
much
talent.
That's fair,
but those guys
talent.
I feel like are all better against, you know, classic pocket passers like Derek Carr.
I just feel like, honestly, I feel like they're going to start really hot. They're going to go 5-0. They're going to lose to the Rams and the Cardinals and the Chiefs. They're basically going to lose three straight. So they're going to be hot in September. They're going to slow down early November. They'll kind of lose. I think they could lose like 4 out of 5. And then I think they beat the Steelers, actually. And then I think that triggers a run where they beat the Bengals, 49ers, Browns, and Raiders. And then lose to the Chargers, which would put them at 10-6. But the first 5 weeks of the season are key because they could win all of those games. And if they do win all of those games, I think they're a playoff team.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. Because I definitely think they can beat the Jets. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. So what is your final question? Give us odds on the Broncos making it to the Super Bowl. So being the AFC Championship team.
Ugh. So I've always sucked with odds. So it's out of 32, right?
Well, to win the
AFC,
it's out of 16.
Out of 16? What would be the best odds would be 16 out of 16.
Okay.
The worst odds would be 1 out of 16. No, that's not my guess. You legitimately jonders. I've been confused on this my entire life. You have to explain odds to me.
Oh, okay. So, it doesn't really – you don't really need to do it like 16 out of 16 or 1 out of 16. You could say, you know, 2 to 6 odds.
2 to 6 odds.
Well, that would be
all 1 right.
out of 2. Now, let's look up what Vegas says.
Okay. Well, this is our newest segment. Eric learns about the basic rules of gambling. I've mastered the over-under and the line, but – I cannot seem to figure out what odds are or how they or how to mean. So, all right, then let's say this, genres. If I bet on something that was 1 to 10, I get 10 times the return, right?
Yes.
Okay.
The Broncos are 14-1 odds. So if you bet $10 on the Broncos winning, you'd get $140 back.
14-1 odds.
Yeah.
So what's a best set of odds, Ben?
The New England Patriots are best at 3-1.
14-1. All right.
And that's the one the AFC, not the Super Bowl.
They have them really, really, really low.
To win the Super Bowl, it's 33-1.
Honestly, let me just quickly run through teams. I think the Broncos have a better shot of winning the Super Bowl.
I'll tell you if Vegas agrees. So give me a window to say if Vegas agrees or not.
Okay. I think they have a better chance than the Bengals.
Vegas agrees.
The Browns.
Vegas agrees.
The Ravens.
Vegas agrees.
The Titans.
Vegas agrees.
The Colts.
Vegas agrees.
The Dolphins.
Vegas agrees.
The Bills, the Jets.
Vegas agrees, Vegas agrees.
And I'd say the Raiders and the Chiefs.
So they have the same odds as the Raiders, and the Chiefs have slightly better odds at 10-1.
All right, let's flip the Broncos to the Chiefs odds. I'll say give me 10-1 odds, because I think they'll most likely be a borderline wild card team to a wild card team, and then anything can happen in the playoffs. I don't think
the
Steelers.
Okay, so this is the real last question then. Who's winning the AFC West?
Well, the Chargers.
Okay.
Like, I mean, hands down. Like, anyone who says the Chargers aren't winning the AFC West, I don't trust them. Like, and if their reasoning is, oh, the Chargers are cursed, I don't trust them even more. Like, no, hands down, Chargers. But the Chargers are winning the AFC West. But I think the Broncos could make it in as, like, a 5 or 6 seed. Probably a 6 seed.
Do you want to take over as host and get us out of here?
I mean, if you want to. It's been a lovely time talking with you.
Follow me at Jonders FPT. Follow Eric at Eric18Utah.
Oh, wait. Hold on. Let me plug you. You had a great show yesterday, my man.
Plug away.
I had a good time listening to the Jonders Forward Pass Thinking Audio. It was a good time yesterday. He took something simple like true or false, and he turned it into a banger of a segment. It was a really good time, and I hope to see more content like that in the future. And honestly, he's always producing some good content. Some episodes are better than others. I'm an honest judge. Some episodes are mediocre, but no episodes are terrible. So with Jonders, you're going to get middle of the road to elite. So roll the dice. Check out the Jonders Forward Pass Thinking Pod. I'd say the exact same thing with this podcast. You're going to get mediocre to elite. Episode in, episode out. So follow us on Twitter at Enzo Pod. Follow Jonders at Jonders FPT. I honestly have no idea when I'm putting this out. I think it'll probably be, I want to say Friday, but it might be Monday. So whenever you hear this, thanks for listening. Peace out. And Jonders, if you ever do comedy, if anyone from the Enzo Podcast ever happens to stumble upon this, follow at Jonders FPT on Twitter and go see Jonders at a comedy show and tell him Eric sent you. And then remember, give an honest grade. We are honest people here at the End Zone Podcast.
Trust me, if they don't, nobody fake laughs. It's real up there.
Right, absolutely. It gets real for sure. I could not do stand-up comedy. I don't know how Jonders does it. I don't know how anyone does it. I don't think funny is something that can be learned, but apparently I'm wrong. So I think that wraps it up. That is the shakiest outro I've ever done in my entire life. Very sorry about that, folks. At Jonders FPT on Twitter, at Eric18Utah on Twitter. Thanks for your time. See you next time. Peace out. All right, again, big thanks to Jonders. He was an excellent fill-in host for us while I got to talk a little bit about the Broncos. Super exciting. Go check out his show. Forward Pass Thinking Audio. You can find it on Google Play, on YouTube, on iTunes. Go check it out. It's a really nice, fun listen to have if you're looking for something to do later this weekend. Up next, we have Ken Guthrie of Full Press Coverage talking about the Bengals a little bit. Thanks for coming on, Ken. Hope you enjoy. Today, I am joined by Ken Guthrie of FullPressCoverage.com, writes about the Bengals for them there, to talk about some Bengals today. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. Super excited to be on. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. The Bengals are, I don't know how to describe them, an odd team, I think. Very up and down year to year. I think everything always depends on, of course, you know, Andy Dalton's surroundings and things like that. So, first off, I would like to know, because I know a lot of Bengals fans kind of, I don't know, it feels like Bengals fans have a weird relationship with the Bengals sometimes. Are you okay with what they're doing right now? Do you like the ownership? I know a lot of people who don't like the ownership. Do you like the fact that Marvin Lewis is still the head coach? Like, what's kind of your feeling about the way the Bengals are structured right now?
Well, it's I kind of have mixed feelings about it, you know, probably like most Bengals fans. I've been complaining for years about I didn't like the way ownership ran it, you know, they don't spend big in free agency, and the drafts are kind of, they draft well there for a while, but they can be hit or miss in that area too. Then bringing back Marvin Lewis, I don't know. He's consistent to say the least, but I was at the point, I feel like a lot of fans were too, where we wanted him out the door. Then, you know, they brought him back after all those rumors were swirling that he was pretty much out the door, you know, but I feel like they're heading in a better direction this offseason. You know, they spent some money, which is more than they've done in a while. Marvin Lewis had promised some changes and all that good stuff, which is more than we've seen from him in the last, 15 years or so that he's been hanging around. And I think it really seems like they're committed to changing the way they do things, especially in the off season, because they've been really frugal since Marvin Lewis has been around, and ownerships doesn't like to spend money, and we saw him spend some money on a new left tackle, which is pretty nice to see that they could identify the biggest problem on the team.
Absolutely, for sure. Let's talk a little bit about that offensive line. Of course, that left tackle is Cordy Glenn, who you acquired from the Buffalo Bills via a trade. What do you like about this offensive line, and tell me kind of the strengths and the weaknesses of it?
Well, it seems like they want to get big, strong, and nasty up front to me, the way that they're heading. Bringing in Cordy Glenn, who is known for being a big, nasty run blocker up there in Buffalo, and I loved him. There's a lot of people who think he's just an average left tackle, which he's played injured, so he might appear that way, but when he's healthy, I think he's top 10, top 12 tackle in the league easily. He's a big man. Clint Bowling at left guard, every Bengals fan will tell you about him. He's big, strong, maul people in the run game, but he can hold his own in the pass game too. And then they went and drafted Billy Price this year in the first round, which, as a slightly biased Buckeye fan too, I think he's going to be great right out the gate. He should be starting, which I think I read somewhere that in these first couple days of training camp, he's been running with the first team. So that's what I like to see, because they needed that upgrade at center over Russell Bodine, who is now actually in Buffalo too. Yeah. And it really seems like they want to get bigger, stronger up front, and get some people who can move the defensive line and give those running backs some space and give Andy Dalton some time, which he desperately needs after the last couple years especially.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's kind of move from the offensive line to, I think, one of the more important functions of that offensive line, which is obviously to promote a running game. You guys lost Jeremy Hill in the offseason, and yes, that may not be much of a loss because his performance had kind of gone downhill, but you just get the sneaking suspicion that Bill Belichick's going to turn him back into a star, because that's what Bill Belichick does. But you guys have got a pretty good running back in Joe Mixon behind that offensive line. He kind of took off in the last 3 weeks of his season. Do you think he's going to break out this year and kind of be at the end of the year how we view what Leonard Fournette was last year?
Oh yeah, for sure. I loved Joe Mixon coming out in the draft last year. You know, off-field issues aside, it seems like he's moved on from that, so I'm going to move on from that too. I don't want to, you know, really press on stuff like that. I want to watch him on the field now. But I think he's primed for a breakout. With that line in front of him, you know, like I said, Cordy Glenn, Billy Price coming in as the new guys. They're people movers up front. Clint Bowling always has been. And Mixon's got, you know, freaky athleticism. He's big, he's strong, he's fast, he can catch the ball. He can run routes. He does just about everything you could possibly want out of a running back. And he struggled last year. It really seemed to me, at first glance, like his vision didn't seem to be what it was in college at Oklahoma, which I guess you could probably attribute to the offensive line in front of him. He probably didn't have a whole lot of faith after getting hit in the backfield snap after snap after snap. That would probably get to him mentally. But with this new line in front of him, I'm guessing that he's probably going to have a little more faith in it, have more room to run. He's going to see the holes better, and he's explosive out of that. He makes that cut and cuts right upfield, but last year he didn't show that as much as he did in college because he wasn't sure where the hole was going to be or if it would be there at all. I think if he has faith that hole is going to be there when he needs it to be there, that he's going to show off that athleticism. We're going to see him really shine behind his new line.
Yeah, absolutely. The line, of course, is obviously a huge part of improving this offense, but of course that line protects Andy Dalton, who, I don't know if you agree with this statement or not, but I feel like Andy Dalton is, I don't know how to describe him, because I don't want to say he's a bad quarterback, because he's not, but he requires good talent around him to be an elite franchise quarterback. Would you say that's true?
That's about spot on. Yeah, I would agree with that. He needs a good line in front of him. He needs some good running backs behind him, and he needs a good defense to carry him. Not gonna lie, you're right. He's not a bad quarterback by any means. I just don't know if he's necessarily a really good quarterback either.
Yeah.
If he's got the perfect team around him, he could make a playoff run, but you know, he's not very good in those big moments, and then neither is the rest of the team. That's not all on him, of course, but if he had that perfect setup there, they could make a playoff run, but that's yet to materialize around him.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about a really important thing for a quarterback to have, which is receivers. Aside from A.J. Green, who is obviously a top 10 wide receiver in the league, I guess Brandon LaFell, he's a decent slot guy. Tyler Boyd, they're waiting for him to kind of recapture what he was when he was a rookie. Who else is there on this, in this receiving core, that can help Andy Dalton succeed? Pardon me. Because I just feel like there's not a whole lot of talent outside of A.J. Green.
Well, you're not wrong, you know. There's not a lot of proven talent outside of A.J. Green. No, he's going to be who he is, a superstar. That's what he does. Brandon LaFell is going to be who he is, an average to below average receiver who, you know, he's not bad, not good. You know, he's just kind of there. That's the way I see him. But he's getting up there in age. I think he's 31 now, and they've got a lot of youth behind LaFell, so I think they're going to start moving on from him. The biggest name I think we all know is probably John Ross. That's the biggest guy who needs to step up in that receiving core behind A.J. Green and take some pressure off of him. If he goes out, he runs that 4.22, breaks the combine 40-yard dash record, and then he comes into the season injured and goes through all this stuff with Marvin Lewis, where apparently there's rumors flying around Marvin Lewis didn't want him in the draft and that he's in the doghouse with Marvin Lewis for this and that and all that. But now we just want to say he's healthy. There's all these clips. You see all these videos from the Bengals coming up on Twitter, Facebook, or whatever, of him blowing by Drake Kirkpatrick, which is really nice to see as a Bengals fan. He needs to step up, and I think he can. People think he's just a speedster, but I'd love what I saw out of him in college as a route runner. He's quick. He's not just straight line fast.
Yeah.
And then I feel like he's the big one. He should have that breakout season kind of like Joe Mixon if he can stay healthy. That's probably the biggest thing for him.
Right. Absolutely. So I guess with all that being said, how do you think that the wide receiving core is going to perform this year?
I think that probably ties right back into that offensive line. Andy Dalton can distribute the ball just almost as well as anybody in the league if he has time to do it. Doesn't have the biggest arm, so he's not going to be – he's never been a great deep ball thrower. A.J. Green just bails him out down. But if he can get some time back there to throw the ball, I think he's got talent. John Ross, you know, speedster, route runner. He should be one of the starters. I hope he's one of the starters. Then they have more. Tyler Boyd has been, you know, up and down the last couple of years. He's kind of a slot guy. They play him outside a little bit, but I think he's better in the slot. And they really need him to step up this year, because I liked him coming out of college too, and he showed a lot. But then there's games where he'll just completely disappear and look just disinterested, like he doesn't want to be out there. He struggled with drops there for a while, which is uncharacteristic of him coming out of college. So I think if Andy Dalton can get time, Ross should be – I think Ross will have a good season. Tyler Boyd should have a good, nice season at coming out of the slot. But there's the other guy that I love. I don't know if they'll give him a chance or not. The Bengals kind of – I don't know what their thinking is sometimes and who they play and who they don't play. But Josh Malone, the rookie from last year – he had some flashes here and there, and I absolutely love him, and I would love to see him starting on the outside across from A.J. Green with John Ross, working in and out of the slot, or, you know, moving him around in these modern offenses, however they want to put him out there. Josh Malone's big. He's got a little bit of speed to him. He's strong. And he's got amazing body control. Reminds me a little bit of A.J. Green. Not quite as good, but, you know, he's got that. He's built like him, plays a little bit like him. A little bigger body, a little more physical, though.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about A.J. Green, because one of the things I'm really curious about is with all these receivers demanding big money, Julio Jones held out, Odell Beckham's working on a new contract extension. When's A.J. Green due for a new contract?
So I've been kind of wondering that myself, and I've seen some quotes where he personally says he's not too worried about it. Like, he said he wants these other guys to get paid, but he said as for him, he said he's on the contract he's on right now, and he said that's all he's worried about right now. He said he's not concerned about contract extensions, the big money and all that stuff, but he's going to be due for one. You know, being an elite player, I think he's top four receiver in the league, 3-4, something like that.
Wow.
You know, he's going to want paid, and you know he's probably going to deserve it, but he's also going to be 30, over the age of 30 by the time this all comes to fruition. You know, it comes down to whether the Bengals are going to want to pay a 30-year-old receiver big time money, or if they think that these young guys that they have stacked up behind him can step up and replace him, which I personally don't think they can. But that depends on how they see it.
Yeah, for sure. Before we move on to the defense, a little bit of an unrelated Bengals question, but a player who used to play on the Bengals that I'm kind of curious about. So, A.J. McCarron, he moved to the Bills. Obviously, Bills fans specifically, got really excited about it, but I'm a little bit skeptical. Should I be? I feel like I've just never really seen A.J. McCarron prove anything.
I'm right with you on that. I did not get the hype that some of those Bills fans are all excited about A.J. McCarron coming over. I think he's a lesser Andy Dalton, and that's
not good.
Saying something.
That's not good.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, exactly. I don't know. He's a smart guy, from what I understand. He doesn't have a terrible arm, you know. He's reasonably accurate. I think he's an average about just everything he does to below average. But, you know, in the NFL, you don't want average to below average in your starting quarterback.
Do you worry about him leaving at all? Because I'm looking at your depth chart and, like, behind Andy Dalton, you guys have no one. You have Matt Barkley, who, like, he's shown a little, but I don't know. I feel like the Bengals might have, like, the worst quarterback depth in the league.
Yeah, I agree with you right there too. Matt Barkley, no. AJ McCarron isn't, I don't think he's fit to be a starter in the league, but he's probably one of the top backups in the entire NFL. He's one of those guys that I would be comfortable with stepping in for a few games here and there and doing what he needs to do. These guys on the Bengals depth chart, Matt Barkley, I might trust for a game. Maybe. Possibly. Probably not. And then there's, you know, Jeff Driskel, who's a preseason star every year because he's an athlete and makes all these big runs and runs all over the place and get all these Bengals fans all hyped up. And they're like, oh, Jeff Driskel should come out and replace Andy Dalton, but they don't watch him throw a football, which is not pretty.
Right.
And then they've got their rookie Logan Woodside, who just picked up a DUI in the offseason and isn't the biggest, strongest, or, you know, most accurate quarterback in the world anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's kind of the offense. Let's move over to the defense really quick. And I have a little game I want to play with you really quick called Who Do You Trust? And I'm going to give you two things. You're laughing. Have you heard this game before?
No, I just don't trust a whole lot of people on this Bengals team sometimes.
Okay, who do you trust? The defensive line or the linebacking core?
The defensive line. Far and away.
Expand on that.
I have had issues with this Bengals linebacking core for years. I have never liked them very much. The defensive line is stacked. I think that's, as far as depth goes, the defensive line is stacked and one of the better in the league. Geno Atkins is the second best defensive tackle in the NFL, in my opinion. And I don't think it's that close, but people don't pay attention to him because he's in a small Cincinnati market, you know. And then you've got all these other guys. They just signed Chris Baker, who had, he had a down line, down year from in Washington or Tampa Bay after he came over from Washington, and people forget about him. You know, he's nothing spectacular, but he was a good player before then. They got Andrew Billings, is, you know, he's just a run stuffer, but he's good at what he does. He's a good run stuffer on the interior. That's nice to have. Then they've got all these edge rushers. You know, Carlos Dunlap is, I think he's underrated year in, year out. He's a stud. You've got, I'm not a Michael Johnson fan, but he can kick inside, as he showed last year, and be a decent pass rusher on the inside. And then you've got Carl Lawson, obviously, who led all rookies in sacks last year with 8.5. I think he's set up to be a stud, no matter where they play him, even though they might play him a linebacker. Jordan Willis, Sam Hubbard. They've got depth and talent along that defensive line that it's just way beyond what they have at linebacker.
Yeah. Man. I mean, those are all good points. Like, I guess my question is, like, as a Bengals fan, like, how sick of you are of Vontaze Burfict are you?
Man, I used to love Burfict. I was like, okay, he's a little bit of a hothead. He plays kind of dumb here and there. But you watch him on the field when he's not doing the most idiotic things you've ever seen in your life, and you think, wow, this is a heck of a linebacker. Because he's not huge. Like, he's a stout guy. You know, he's not particularly fast, but he's got those instincts. He's like, he knows what's going to happen before that ball is snapped, and he flies to that football. I mean, he's one of the better linebackers in the NFL on the field, but man, it's a waste of talent, I think. It's ridiculous how he just does what he does, and he doesn't seem to want to stop. All these suspensions come, they don't affect him. He comes back out on the field, keeps doing what he's going to do. Goes out there, you know, twisting ankles or taking cheap shots, hitting guys in the head, and that's just, he gets old after a while. I was excited for him when he was younger, you know, coming out, flying around the field, like, wow, I love this guy. They finally have a nice linebacker, but, man, it's getting to the point where it's not even worth it anymore.
Do you think they should cut him?
Oh, Oh man, I don't know that. If he comes back from his suspension this year and keeps up with what he's been doing, I wouldn't blame him for letting him go. I guess that's the way I see it. I don't know if I think they should or not, because they've been so weak at the position. They're probably desperate for a playmaker, but I wouldn't blame him for doing it if he keeps it up.
Absolutely. Wrapping up, let's talk a little bit about the secondary. George Iloka, I think he's one of my favorite safeties to watch in the league. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah. I feel like he's very underrated.
Yeah, I agree. And wholeheartedly.
I used to not like him a lot coming out because I always wanted the Bengals to have this rangy playmaking safety, and I thought that should be George Iloka, but he's not. So that just made me dislike him. But the last couple years, you know, he's not going to rack up the interceptions. But he's smart, instinctive, a heck of a tackler. You know, he's huge. He's going to go back there. He's going to creep up on that line of scrimmage. He's going to bang up there in the trenches, and he's not afraid to mix it up. That's what he does. And he's not terrible in coverage, you know, for being, what, 6'3", 6'4". He's a big dude. He flies around back there, and he, like I said, he's not going to be a big turnover machine, but he's solid. He's very, very solid back there, and I'm 110% comfortable with him staying on the team, you know, doing what he's doing right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So, outside of George Iloka, is the secondary the strongest part of the Bengals' defense, or is it still the defensive line?
See, that's where that comes down to the unproven talent, I think, because it could be the strongest on the defense. The defensive line is going to be hard to top this year, but that secondary, that could be nasty back there. With you know, George Iloka, I think he's an above-average safety, easily, if not better than that in his best years. And then Sean Williams is just that perfect guy to come down and play in the box. He's a perfect, like, prototypical strong safety. I know those lines are a little blurred today in the modern NFL, but he can come down. He's one of the better tacklers I've seen at safety. Not much in coverage, but that's okay. They've got guys to do that. Their corners could be really good. You know, Drake Kirkpatrick is up and down. He's good enough. You know, he's good enough to start, I guess. He can get burnt here and there, but throughout the season, he'll be solid for him. And then William Jackson he's going to come into this season and become a top five corner in the league, if he isn't already. Talent-wise, he probably is, but he needs to prove that for more than just one season, and he wasn't even a full-time starter last year.
All right.
All you need to look is what he did against Antonio Brown. I don't have the stats off the
Who
top
Who was this
of my
again?
Head,
just out of curiosity.
William Jackson.
William Jackson. All right. Honestly, he's not a name I've heard a lot about. Talk to me a little bit more about him, I guess.
William Jackson was what they drafted him in 2016. You know, he spent his entire rookie year on IR with a torn pec, I believe. And, you know, he was a freaky athlete coming out. You know, at the time they drafted him, I was like, oh, man, another first-round corner. You know, we've got plenty of those. We don't need him. But now, you know, now I'm looking back. Pac-Man's gone. Dre's getting up there in age, Kirkpatrick, and William Jackson came in last year. He gained more and more snaps as that year went on, and, man, I'd put him up against any receiver in the league. He can press. He can come back in zone. The way he breaks on the ball is unbelievable. He's got out-of-this-world quickness and speed. When he sees that ball leave the quarterback's hands, it's absolutely out of this world how much ground he can cover. I am crazy excited for what he's going to do this year. I think he's going to skyrocket to be one of the best corners in the league.
Yeah, only one interception last year, but 13 passes defensed and 19 solo tackles plus a sack. That's certainly not bad for a player who wasn't necessarily a starter, but you believe he'll be a starter this year?
He should be. I think he'll be starting on the outside with Dre Kirkpatrick and with Darquez Dennard in at the slot.
All right. Anything else to add onto the secondary?
I think that about covers it. I think, well, Denard's going to be – he had a little bit of a breakout year. He's good enough in coverage, but he's more of a – he's pretty physical for a little slot corner, I'm not going to lie. But overall, they're starting corners, their safeties. I got to throw in the rookie, Jesse Bates, coming out of Wake Forest. And I love – he's that rangy guy I've been wanting for years. And I've heard some rumors they might try to run some three safety sets to get Bates on the field playing center field and get some interceptions and get some turnovers on that defense like they needed the last few years.
Absolutely. So let's close it up here and let me get it from you. Tell me, what's the Bengals' record this year going to be?
Oh, man. I've been bouncing back and forth because they could – oh – they could go 4-12, or they could go 10-6. I'm gonna say 9-7 because they have the talent. Honestly, I think the coaching might be an issue, but the talent's there, and that could probably get them by to at least 500, if not a little above. So I'm gonna roll with 9-7.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of came to the same conclusion. I've been writing these season previews. I wrote the Bengals one way back. But, yeah, I have their ceiling at, like, 11-5 and their floor at, like, 3-13. So I think they've got a super good ceiling, super low floor. I think they're going to go 8-8 personally. But it would not shock me at all if they went 9-7. And I think the AFC is bad enough. And I think the Steelers are going to take a little bit of a step back this year. That, I don't know, maybe 9-7 is good enough to make the playoffs. It's sneaky. The AFC North is a very competitive division because I feel like, yes, on paper-wise, the Steelers have a much more talented roster. But if you actually look at, like, their statistics, it doesn't quite match up with the rest of the division. I think everyone in that division is going to be around 7-9 to 10-6, and whoever that 10-6 team is going to be the one to win the division. So I don't know. I'm excited to watch the AFC North this year. I think it'll be entertaining.
Oh yeah, for sure. I agree with you. It's going to be a lot tighter than people think. It's very competitive, like you said, with the Steelers probably taking a little bit of a step back, and the other teams probably taking just a little bit of a step forward. Maybe not a lot, but
I mean,
just enough.
I'm not going to lie. I get the Browns are 0-16, and every year everyone gets really excited about the Browns only to have them crash and burn. But, like, that roster on paper, that could be a playoff team. If things broke their way, they definitely have the talent to be a playoff team. But
they're the Browns,
so probably won't happen. But, you know, hey, a guy can dream. A guy can dream. I'm not a Browns fan, but I know a lot of Browns fans, so I hope the Browns do okay this year. For sure. All righty. Well, Ken, why don't you plug where people can find you online and find some of your stuff?
All right, you guys can find me on fullpresscoverage.com. I cover the Cincinnati Bengals for that website. I just started a couple months ago, but, you know, just go to the website. You should find some tab to go find me under the AFC North. Go to Bengals, and I should be right there.
Awesome. Where can people find you on Twitter?
My Twitter at is... actually don't know it off the top of my head. Let me look at it real quick.
Oh, that's a rookie move.
I know. It's terrible. People ask me all the time. I'm like, wait a second.
That's a rookie move.
It is at Guthrie26. My last name, Guthrie26.
At Guthrie26. 26. All right, man. Thank you very much for joining us. To the rest of our audience, also, thank you very much for joining us. This show should be out Saturday. We'll have another show out Monday. And then we will probably have shows out on Tuesday and Wednesday as well. And then a little bit of a break. And then we'll be back with divisional previews starting next Saturday. All right, folks. Thanks for listening to the End Zone Podcast. Peace out. Follow us on Twitter at EndZonePod. If you have any suggestions, questions, or you just want a shout-out on the pod, send an email to endzonepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.